Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Soci. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and we have a blog which you can read at filmsociology.tumblr.com. And you can also check out my new blog series, looking back at the film year that was 1983. This week is the first installment. Last week was the intro. You can read what I wrote about the Bill Forsyth film Local Hero. I know there's no music. You know why? Because Kobe's not engineering the show. I am. And apparently multitasking is hard. So, and so I, of course, brought in a couple of ringers. Ladies and gentlemen, I have to say, again, hi, I'm Matthew Soci, host of this shindig. One of the things that I'm thankful for, besides the fact that I have this show and Blues House Party and all the work here at WFYI, as well as my smarter two-thirds in my life, in studio, not my smarter two-thirds, but I also have friends and colleagues that are willing to come in on Black Friday, even though no item is really worth knocking people over and trampling them or killing them, as we've heard in the news today. But we do have a couple of people to help fill in for today's festivities here, and they both have intros. They've been here this much. We think you know this man.
It's me, dear friends, alive and kicking. Well, I'm anyway.
I'll be kicking you with my jingle bells.
That's it. Kick the footless man.
You know, you walk into this stuff. Oh, you roll.
Yes! Yes! Awesome!
Well, when a fella comes back from the dead, I find that an occasion to stand up, be counted.
It's not a film sociology
it's
if
not
I don't
hard.
Do a foot joke.
Well, I can see where it'd be difficult for a man of your stature to keep in touch with even half the people you know. Well, you know beautiful women, they encourage you one minute and cut the legs out from under you the next.
I'm not half the man I used to be.
Wow. Why is it that the guy in the wheelchair gets a film called The Sitter?
Ladies and gentlemen, the independent critic, Richard Probst.
Bring it on, the footless wonder of the world.
It's also on the back of his wheelchair. And before anybody starts writing nasty notes and complaining, for the record, it should be known, Richard started it.
Yes.
So there, we just piggybacked onto it. And of course, also in studio from the Film Yap, here's Joe Shearer. What's going on at the Film Yap?
Oh, you know, a little of this, a little of that.
Wow, great info, Joe. Thanks. I assume that's still going on at the Film Yap this week?
Always.
Always. Just a little of this and a little of that. All right. So, and we have a special guest critic who will come in a little bit. So, but it's a busy time, of course. We're in grown-up movie season. Of course, we had Thanksgiving. And yeah, so we had movies opening on Wednesday because it's very important if they open on a Wednesday. And of course, they have extra money to go in. So, I want to start with something I know Richard and I both got to see on Monday. And it's the latest film from Alexander Payne called Nebraska. This is one of his Alexander Payne road trip films, like Sideways and About Schmidt. This time shot in beautiful gray and gray and more gray and black and white. It stars Bruce Dern as an old codger alcoholic who thinks he has won $1 million because he got an envelope with his name on it saying that he's won $1 million. You kind of know where this is going. And he really, really wants to go and collect. And he decides to, he winds up kind of talking his bullying, his youngest son, played by Chris Forte, to
Will
Forte. Will Forte. Not Chris. That's the that's the less talented brother who's not on Saturday Night Live. To drive him along for the trip. And of course, they're supposed to go from Billings, Montana to Lincoln, Nebraska, but they must stop in small town Nebraska where Bruce Dern grew up, and there's Stacy Keach and his minions, and more family stuff happens. So, yeah, that's about it. Richard, your thoughts on the film?
Isn't that pretty much the story?
It pretty much is the story, except we don't really tell you if he gets $1 million or not. But there is father and son moments. That's plot. That's character stuff to go with the plot stuff that happens.
I think if you've ever been in a small town or spent any kind of time in a small town, some of this is going to really resonate with you. I mean, I think that it's a very slow, but it's a well-paced film.
I think it's safer to say it is well-paced without being. It is a slow-paced film, but not slow.
It's not, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's paced the way it needs to be paced to tell the story.
Exactly.
You know, Bruce Dern, I don't know if he gives the performance of his lifetime, but he gives an incredible performance.
He does, and I think he said, I think that this has been in talks for a decade. Like he, or that, or
yeah.
He said he couldn't have done this 10 years ago.
My understanding is he set it aside after Sideways because it was just, you know, it had some of the similar themes, and it does,
right.
But it's a very different film, even though you've still got that road trip aspect.
Right, and by when we say road trip, of course, but it is not your typical mainstream multiplex road trip. Yes, there is some father son issues that need to be taken care of, and there's a little bit of hijinks involving Will Forte and his brother, played by Bob Odenkirk, who's also very good in this.
Very
you
good.
Have two comics. Who, you know, sometimes when a comic has a real director having them act, mm-hmm. it turns out really good performances from the two of them, and this is the case with them, as opposed to, you know, letting the camera roll and let the comic do whatever they feel like. But anyway, there is some of that. It's just done in a low key manner.
It's very natural. I mean, I think the performances are kind of deceptive. You don't really realize how good they are until they kind of linger in your brain when you've left.
Yep.
June Squibb was that way for me.
Yeah, and she was one of those. I had to see what else she had done, and she's done quite a bit, and she's the kind of that lady. But she plays the wife of Bruce Dern, who. When you first, in the first few scenes, you think is just an incredible pain in the rear. I mean, incredible. But she's got one payoff moment involving the family. Because guess what? When somebody finds out you win $1 million, they come out of the woodworks, literally.
Yeah.
And there is a moment that adds to the element of the marriage. It is a long marriage. It is not the most healthy marriage. But she has, yes, Jane Squibb has a moment. That's just great.
And it's amazing, and it makes you realize how good she is in the film.
Yes.
I mean, until then, you're thinking, well, maybe this is just June Squibb. Then
no,
it's sublime.
Exactly. So kudos to June Squibb. And Bruce Dern's kind of, like you were saying, the same way. If you saw this on paper, yes, he's a drunk, and he's an old coot, and he's a little forgetful, maybe, but and you're not quite sure when he's being forgetful or if he is just playing you like a fiddle. But it's a really nice, nuanced performance, and I'm really, really happy for
Bruce
Dern.
Goes places with this performance that it's just, again, you just don't realize how good it is. It's awesome.
So most definitely on that. So because of that, I should say, it like I said, it's shot in black and white. It's funny because the film opens with the old Paramount logo from, mm-hmm. I think, looks like the 50s. And you immediately get I did as a film nerd, flashbacks of films like Paper Moon and The Last Picture Show of showing small town Nebraska. Or, it could have been Medora, for all we know, because we have to mention Medora. Yeah. But it is the capturing of that small town feel. Now, like The Onion wasn't crazy about it because of the locals. I think part of it was they're an easy target. The small town people are an easy target. And there's scenes where it's all the guys watching football and they have these monosyllabic conversations with one another. Well, some are even less than monosyllabic. unfortunately, those people exist. So I didn't mind if the local yokels were kind of a target on this. Is it an easy target? Maybe, but it's kind of accurate in this.
And
case.
I didn't think they ever crossed that line to caricature.
Correct.
So
yeah, there's that. So all right, with that in mind.
Yes, 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 yes.
Okay, we're gonna. Joe, are you ready? You're ready.
Absolutely.
Okay, I know you're.
I'm grooving myself.
You're the Mickey to your son's Rocky, just making sure everything's ready over there. I guess we'll move on to Frozen, because you just saw that for the second time today.
Yes, I did. We went and saw it last Monday. They've had a couple of screenings of it. We caught the second one, and my wife wanted to see it as well, so we all went again today, having a day off, and I liked it every bit as much as I did the first time around.
Okay, and... because all I've heard is it's Disney and there's music and there's a lot of snow puns.
Yeah, it's a very it's a musical, obviously.
And I don't think that's really pushed in the ad campaign, is it?
It's really not, and it really, to be honest, I was not excited about the musical aspect. Once I knew very little about it going in, And, you know, and I sit down and they start sing, talking, and I'm going, oh, great, this is a musical. We're going to sit here through all these songs. I'm not a huge fan of the musical. By the end of the movie, it really won me over. The story, just very briefly, is basically the Snow Queen, I believe, is the
that's
kind
a
of
Hitchcock
original
actress.
The fairy tale they're taking off of.
Yeah.
Couple of sisters are the main two characters. One of them is the heir to the throne.
Idina Menzel and
yes,
Kristen Bell.
And, yeah,
right.
Kristen Bell is the non-queen princess.
Sure.
And there's sort of a love interest going on, but the heir to the throne has a very special magical power involving snow and ice that she cannot control. She has to keep that secret for various reasons, and that's basically where we go off. Once she becomes the queen, this power becomes public. Everyone thinks she's a witch, and she runs off, and thus our adventure also happens to include the fact that once she runs off, she kind of sheds this veneer of, you know, I can't use my powers, and she just goes crazy with them, and she blankets the entire kingdom in snow in the middle of summer. So she also does not know this. So the sister, Anna, heads off to tell her sister, hey, you got to knock this off. And, you know, there's lots of singing, and there's a very adorable, not obnoxiously so, snowman character who was definitely my favorite character of the film.
Is it like the snow equivalent of Sebastian the Crab?
Yes.
You have to have like a goofy little sidekick of some kind.
He is the goofy sidekick, and when you see him at first, you think, okay, here's the obnoxious Robin Williams sidekick. And he is completely not. He manages to convey that naivete about the world. He has no. Mm-hmm. He basically is a snowman who longs to see the summer. And of course, you know.
don't we all, I guess.
Clashing ideologies there. And he, you know, so they never tell him. So, of course, he continues kind of the stream to restore the summer, not knowing it's going to kill him, essentially. And it's his naivete and his earnestness is just so great. Mm-hmm. It is not annoying at all. And when it very easily could have been, there's just a touch of restraint there that's really fun. And, you know, you've seen some of the gags, probably, if you've seen the commercials with the nose, the carrot nose. And
right.
It's a good time as far as that goes.
I thought Josh Gad did that vocal work amazingly.
Oh, it was so great.
I mean, it was perfectly cast.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that the other thing about this film is the voices are not, they're not distracting. You know, you're not
because you immediately recognize it's a big name actor doing stuff.
Yeah, it's not the kind of thing. Oh, okay. Well, there's Robin Williams. Now he's being Robin Williams. These are the characters first, and maybe you kind of recognize the voice on the side from that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you did see it, Richard?
I did see it.
Okay, you did. You also enjoyed it?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely loved it. I thought all of the vocal, you know, performances were just absolutely delightful. The songs, I mean, I'm still remembering the songs.
Yeah, they were fantastic.
And this is the kind of thing that, you know, when it comes on DVD, you're going to be buying it for your kids. Oh, yeah. I mean, they want it. You'll enjoy it. You won't mind it playing in the background. Mm-hmm. It's good music. There wasn't any of the unnecessary, you know, kind of tipping to adults.
Okay.
But I think adults and children will both like it. I mean, it's kind of classic Disney, which... I got the chance to interview one of the animators for the film.
Oh, really?
And he talked about it being classic Disney and what they like to do, and slight difference of having two really female leads.
Okay. Well, speaking of kids, you brought in a ringer, Joe.
Right? I did. My son, Riley. You say hi.
Hi.
Riley, how are you doing, sir?
Good.
Okay. So you saw Frozen as well. You saw it today. What did you think?
I really liked it.
And what about it did you like?
Where she like made that huge castle, the castle with the stairs.
Mm-hmm. She makes a castle out of ice, right? Yeah. And what about the action? There were a lot of There were a lot of nice action scenes, although it's not a violent movie.
No, but was it like Frozone smooth action scenes? Or?
There's a lot of dangling from snowy precipices and...
Or sliding down sheets of ice.
Yes,
things.
Lots of sledding without the sleds. So what would you say were your favorite, kind of the favorite part of it? Of course, we're not giving away the end of the movie.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah. I really like the part where the guy cut off the snow giant's leg.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's a very cool...
Yes! Yes!
Oh, you just egged him on. See, now you can't stop.
There's a reason I like your son so much, Joe.
That was a fun part. There's the queen, in an attempt to kind of get rid of these people who are coming after her, creates a giant snow monster, and one of the guys kind of cuts its leg off. But, you know, of course, like I said, it's not as violent as
to spite its face.
Yeah, exactly. But, he's made of snow. So it's not really, it kind of slows him down, but it's not.
Oddly enough, his name is Richard.
No, it isn't.
It is now.
I lied about that.
Yeah, okay. You did lie about that. All right, so it sounds like all three of you think this.
Yes, yes,
so
yes,
you did like
yes,
it, Riley.
Yes.
Let's get back
yes,
to that.
I did.
Okay.
Okay, very good. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. See, it's because nobody cares what the old guys think.
Yeah.
So a young lad liked a princess musical animated feature.
Absolutely.
With snow. So very cool. Very cool indeed. Okay, so now we go from something cold to something burning with The Book Thief, where they're book thieves. No.
They're book thieves.
Book thieves. So, Richard, you got
the
to
Nazi
see
book thieves.
Nazi book thieves. And, of course, this has the Truly Moving Pictures stamp of approval.
Yeah.
Which means it's sentimental.
Mm-hmm. It is sentimental. It is moving. It is truly. It's a picture.
It's positive. It's inspiring.
So tell us about it.
It's just not very entertaining.
Ooh.
You can't say that. That's a truly moving picture.
So
it's going to move out of theaters very quickly.
Oh. So tell us a little bit.
All apologies.
It's really not that bad. I am playing with it.
No.
Okay, it is. No. it is based on a book from, I can't remember what, I think it's 2005. Mm-hmm. So you've got this kind of this heroine, this, how does she say her name? Liesel?
You're asking me? I didn't see it.
You should have seen it.
I know I should have, but.
I think the saving grace for this film is, what's his name now? See, I'm
Jeffrey Rush.
Thank you, Jeffrey
Who
Rush.
Who appeared here in Indianapolis.
Uh-huh. He did come
in
to
promoting this film. Yeah.
And let's face it, anything he does, he elevates.
That is true.
It just seems to be true. It is a kind of a Nazi era. It's kind of a reminder film of the fact that there were good people in Germany while everything was going on with Hitler. So it does have a very important message to it, and it's told in a way that I think is very family friendly, which I think is important because these are very valuable discussions to have. So for that aspect, I love the purpose behind the film. I love how they brought that to life. I thought that they played it safe an awful lot. Obviously, they were going for more of the family market, but
right.
There was just, I don't want to say bland because that's really too strong, but you've got the typical thing of the young girl who's being taken off to live with a family during the war. This is Jeffrey Rush and Emily Watson. They end up bringing in and, hiding a Jew in the basement. They kind of form a friend, the girl and the boy form a friendship. The girl loves to read, which is where we get the title of The Book Thief, because she kind of starts acquiring books, mm-hmm. including a lot of times books that the Nazis have
deemed inappropriate,
banned, destroyed.
We're going to get, this is the second of the Nazis Destroy Art films that are coming, because George Clooney's picture is going to be
exactly
out later. Well, probably sometime in December we'll get it.
Yeah. I make fun of it. I thought it could have been a lot more, but it's certainly worth it for family viewing, and somewhat disappointing.
It just really didn't do anything for me.
That's about all I can
do. That's about
it.
Okay,
that's
fine.
You know.
Or this.
Y'all love it, so.
Y'all. Yeah, so, all right, very good. Also opening in theaters today is Homefront with Jason Statham and the latest artistic experiment from James Franco, being in the Jason Statham movie.
Wow.
I know. And Winona Ryder, Kate Bosworth, written by Sylvester Stallone. That one I didn't know until about a week ago.
Really?
I'd seen the trailers because, Jason Statham's going to whoop somebody and it'll be action-y. But the fact that, one, James Franco is your villain, And two, that Sly wrote it. So
wow.
That opened today as well as... What?
I said don't let that stop you from seeing it.
It's maybe dumb.
We don't know that, but we're just I just like playing that.
Yeah, no idea.
No, we don't. And then also Philomena. Am I saying that with Judy Dench and Steve Coogan is also opening to as well. That's directed by Stephen Frears. So I forgot to mention at the beginning because, well, I'm engineering and hosting, and apparently I can't do that very well. One of the things we're going to talk about, and we'll get to it probably after this chat, but we're going to talk – because Joe Shearer is here – by the way, I have to tell the story. Usually I am out headhunting for guests from time because everybody's busy, and one of the perks and drawbacks maybe to having a film show – Fridays at 5 p.m. is that people want to get the bleep home. And, you know, and especially if you've had a long day. And I know Joe has work circumstances mm-hmm. and family circumstances. So anyway, I get a note from Joe saying, I want to be on your show on the day after Thanksgiving. I'm like, great. Okay, sure. Yeah. Why? And no, I'm not working. And I'm like, what about your family? They're going to want me out of the house anyway. Okay, so and of course that happened, and then soon Richard chimed in, and mm-hmm. so anyway, I'm very thankful for my IFJA brothers to come and hang out on the day after Thanksgiving when WFY offices are closed except for us,
yeah,
and Don next door and the TV people.
Because we are public radio goodness.
We are public radio goodness. So there's that.
No, I just think I'm gonna barf.
No, you're not.
Jeez.
Okay, but because Joe is here, because this is a show we've been talking about for a while, we wanted to talk about pro wrestling in cinema mm-hmm. or wrestlers in cinema. And if you follow us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Matthew Sosie or at the Film Yap, mm-hmm. Joe suffers from delusions of grandeur. He thinks he's going to be living with Pam Grier sometime soon, even though she's going to be with me. Oh, wait,
she follows me on Twitter.
And she follows me on Twitter.
No, first. She doesn't.
Yes, she does.
No.
You can check it out.
She unfriended you, or she unfollowed you after she followed me.
Welcome to Film Sociology Junior High.
Wow.
But I did get a chance to talk with another person that will make Joe jealous. But I got to talk with Gail Kim, also known in film sociology world as Mrs. Robert Irvine, among mm-hmm. others. She is the TNA women's champ. What's, oh gosh, I don't
know. Knockouts.
Knockout champion. Yeah. Women's knockout champion. And she's a knockout.
I think she will knock you out if you get it wrong.
Yeah, yeah she will. Except, no, actually she won't because I'll ask for more and she'll stop. That's how I get through.
The look on her face when she stops.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, you know, we've had her husband on the show many, many times, and I told her once I finally got a copy or finally got to watch a movie she did back in 2009, 2010 called Ninja's Creed or Royal Kill, depending on who you talk to, I would have her on the show. And I have to give kudos to Gail and Robert to letting me chat with them. They're on their vacation. They're on holiday because he's English.
Yeah.
And anyway, so here is my chat with Gail Kim. Joining me on Film Sociology today is TNA Women's Knockout Champion, Mrs. Robert Irvine, and a really good sport because all the women in my life have to be. Gail Kim. Hi, Gail.
Hi, Matthew. How are you?
I'm okay. Yourself?
I'm great, and I love being introduced as Mrs. Robert Irvine.
I wasn't sure what order to put it in, but I just like all the women in my life, I just say yes, dear. So
that's the proper way to be. We're just talking about that, about who's the boss. Relationship.
Well, between my wife and my daughter, I think I'm bronze. So it's it's a Jane Austen world,
always
and I'm just the dad.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, dear.
So tell me a little bit about what you remember from Ninja's Creed, which I know was also Royal Kill, which I'm sure was other
right.
titles. But what do you remember most about the film?
I remember my memories of it was that they wanted to give me the role. I had gotten the role through a writer I had worked with previously through wrestling. And he knew the director, and they were looking for someone to play this role. And actually, our schedules never coincided, so they were going to recast it. And so I kind of moved on, and then they ended up not being able to find the girl. So they worked around my schedule. And I said, okay, this is great, because this kind of role is like, I knew it's, you know, based on being very physical and action-oriented, and that's exactly what I was interested in. So we went there. I went to Washington, Virginia, around that area, and we filmed a lot around that area. It was winter time. The director, Bobber, he was amazing to work with. The whole, you know, it's a very small crew because it's an indie film. And so it was a nice little, you know, small family. And I hadn't met the whole crew because I was the last to film out of everyone because, like I said, they hadn't, you know, cast that one role. So I was the last to film, and we did a week of stunt work, me and the lead actor, Alex, and the stunt crew. And I was just picking up on everything really quickly. I mean, I guess because of wrestling and, you know, I just took to the physical nature quite quickly. And then they brought in a swordsman who taught me a lot of the sword fighting, and I took to that really quickly. We only did that for about, I think, a day or two. Mm-hmm. And we would rehearse the action scenes from 12 noon till almost midnight every day for a week. So it was a lot. It was exhausting. And then everything went really well. You know, I did all my own stunts because I just felt like, well, I better, right? I better be able to. And in the end, the director was really happy with everything. And I guess the most positive feedback they got when they showed it to audiences was the action scenes. So then he ended up, that's why you see, he put me on the cover of that DVD, and everything actually worked out in my favor when it was just not really supposed to happen. So it was a really great experience. I'm glad it happened.
Now, yeah, I think you're definitely one of the highlights of the film. And for those who haven't seen it, you're basically an assassin out to find the last heir of an ancient kingdom from the Himalayas.
Yes, yes. And I could go more into detail about that, but I don't want to ruin it. About the role of who I am.
That's fine. I would say if it was a choice between some would say female Terminator, but you're smaller and better looking than Arnold,
yeah.
So we can, you know, you're
a female assassin. Yeah, we can just leave it at that. So it was so much fun. I love anything physical, obviously, because you can tell by my career. But it was a lot of fun, and the lead actor was, you know, a really good sport, because I think in a lot of movies and TV, when you see physicality, a lot of it, they are positioned, so they're really kind of far from each other. They don't really hit each other. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times I would really throw him or hit him, and he took it, you know? So he was a really good sport. He had taken jiu-jitsu, from what I understood, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, so he was used to the physicality.
Right. So
yeah.
with those action scenes, I obviously your training came in to as an advantage, but did you have to prepare your moves differently for the camera compared to in the ring?
No, I didn't, because that's really up to the director and how he wanted to film it. And so my only concerns were if I was going to be getting physical with another person to do it safely, to have the right people working with me. And we did, you know, with Alex had a stunt double, but he did a lot of the stuff himself as well. And then we would always ad-lib, you know, we'd add cooler things to do. And, you know, we had the right stunt crew with us, and they knew the limitations and the safety. And that's what we worked with. So we didn't really have to change much. We just added more, I would say.
So except for the occasional, you know, accidental taking a punch, but it sounds like everything went pretty smooth physically.
Yeah. Well, there's one scene where I run up a wall and land on my feet.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time we tried it, I didn't let go of the neck of, I think it was a stunt. I'm not sure if it was a stunt guy or the lead actor. And that could have went wrong. I mean, I could have broken his neck. But then luckily that he was okay. And we went on, and we figured out the safe way to do it. And it turned out great.
And I, you know, of course, like I said, with the packaging, it seemed like because there have been wrestlers that have starred in films, but they've been mostly men. John Cena's most noted, and it seemed like they were trying to do a push this way only for the ladies. Do you still get movie offers?
No, I mean, we get little offers to do, you know, little spots, but hey, if it's not the right thing, I mean, I'm not an actor, to be honest. I do acting in my job.
Yes,
but wrestling is truly my passion. Acting, I give complete respect to actors out there who delve into their roles and become that other person, because that's really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that from that. And I would openly challenge myself to do other roles, but it would have to be the right ones, like physical roles, that, like that one that I felt more comfortable in. But I have to give it, like I said, to the respect to the people who actually have the passion for acting. and do that as a living, it's difficult.
And you, I mean, and you also have a year-round job. There's no season. It's just, it's constant.
Exactly. So. Yeah. So, you know, my job is kind of almost like acting, stunt work, and sports, you know, an athlete all in one. It's pretty crazy. And I actually didn't realize how hard my job was until when I was working for WWE.
Mm-hmm.
We started doing this celebrity guest host thing every week. And our very first host was... what's his name from Entourage? Ari. Jeremy Piven.
Okay.
You know, who is a great actor. And he went out there, and all he had to do was cut a promo in front of the live audience. And he screwed up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just normally thought, oh, he's an actor. He'll nail it. And we do all these things all at once in front of a live audience, have to hit the times and cues, being physical and speaking. And I was like, wow, you know what? Our job is really hard. And you don't realize that until you see someone else try to do it.
And then on the flip side of the coin, let's see Judi Dench do TNA.
Yes, we would love to see her fight. I'd love to see my husband do it.
Uh-oh.
He always says he can do the speaking part, and he looks the part, but I don't know if he can actually handle the physicality.
Well, there was the moment where he was standing next to the Big Show. That was an eye-opener.
Oh, yeah. And you could see how big the Big Show is.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Yeah.
So
he's very, very strong.
How did you get into wrestling?
I got into wrestling when I was a kid. I watched wrestling when everyone did, you know, when Hulk Hogan was huge and Roddy Piper, and just when Saturday night's main event was around. And then I stopped watching it. Mm-hmm. And then probably around when I was 20 years old, I started getting caught up in the storylines again. It's like a soap opera, a male soap opera, and I got caught up. And at that time, the girls were really athletic and were very strong, powerful women and doing the athletic thing. And I thought, wow, oh, they don't have an Asian girl, and I love this. And I almost became, you know, like borderline obsessed, as all our fans are. They're very loyal and hardcore. And I found a wrestling school, and then, I mean, this long story, keeping it short, is that I just found a wrestling school. 2 years later, I got a tryout with WWE, and I got signed, and now I've been wrestling for 14 years.
And I know you also went to school, right? You studied, I can't remember what exactly it's called.
I studied kinesiology at University of Toronto for 2 years. Then I transferred to another university. I mean, they call it college in the United States.
Sure, sure.
Ryerson, and I studied nutrition there for about a year. And then I realized I wanted to become a wrestler, and I took my tuition money and put it towards wrestling school. And I just thought, okay, I'll tell my parents once I feel like my dream is coming true, and which at that time I thought I'll become a wrestler in a year. And I didn't know that was an unrealistic goal. And it actually happened within 2 years, so I was very lucky. And then they kind of figured it out, and that I wasn't the typical structured Korean daughter that they were gonna that they thought they were gonna have.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also I brought up your schooling, because it seems, does that help you out physically? Because I mean, you've been doing this for quite a while, and you're not only in great shape, but you're walking straight, you're upright. I mean, you know, we've seen this job take a toll on people, male and female.
Yes, it definitely does. I don't know if the schooling actually helped me. I mean, definitely in terms of giving me some education and knowledge about taking care of my body a little bit, but you know, it's just been the stuff that I learned in school does not really apply too much. I mean, the nutrition part, yes. And I've applied that to my life. But I've just been taking care of my body chiropractic-wise, massage-wise. You know, you try not to do some dumb things, even though I have done a lot of dumb things, you know, high-risk things. I've just been really lucky, knock on wood, you know.
Sure.
So I just hope that to be honest, I've been way more physical in Impact Wrestling, TNA, than WWE. So I've worked for both companies twice. So every time I went to WWE, it was kind of like saving my body, because I didn't do a lot of the wrestling
mm-hmm.
and the physicality. But with TNA Impact Wrestling, yeah, there's a lot of – because they kind of treat the girls a little bit differently. We're more about the wrestling and the wrestling division. And, you know, they don't limit us to wrestling like the guys, and so that's where a lot of the wear and tear comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had longevity because of WWE.
My dad was a ringside physician for wrestling in Michigan back in the late 60s, early 70s. And you know, these were guys that were on the road, you know, 320 days a year. And, you know, between that and the lifestyle choices, you know, it didn't end all that pleasant, I guess.
No, you're right. And, you know, the business has changed a lot probably since then because, they're, like you said, the lifestyle choices. There has, you know, in the media, they talk a lot about the use of drugs and deaths. And a lot of that has changed because they've both companies have instilled drug testing. So that's really helped everyone in the long run. They help you educate yourself on how to take your care of your body. And it's really changed. I don't know anybody right now currently with any type of drug problem. Most people are healthy, and if they aren't, it's just, you know, normal wear and tear. But you don't hear so much about all those problems anymore, which is great.
And it's also, I think, also we're in a 24-hour news thing. I remember going to a match in Detroit, and somebody threw a beer at Jim Neidhart, and Jim just decked the guy. And, you know, that sort of thing would now be on YouTube with a million hits.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And hopefully, you know, fans don't do that anymore. You hear the occasional story, but normally the fans, they're normally respectful.
Yeah.
You occasionally get the crazy ones, but hey, that's what you're going to expect from wrestling crowds, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what action films did you watch growing up? Were they influential as well as far as, I guess, girl power? Or, you know, you enjoyed watching the young guys in action movies?
I do enjoy action movies. I can't remember specifically as a kid which ones I watched. I'd say, you know who I really admire in the last 10 years, and that's Jackie Chan. I know it's so typical, but I love him because he did all of his own choreography, his own stunts. I mean, and how old is he? You know, he's phenomenal, and he's funny. I mean, I love all his movies, and the women, anytime any woman has some kind of, you know, ass-kicking role, I really admire that. I love that. I love, but I don't like when I see, you know, like a really strong woman, for example, I'm not hating on her or anything like that, but Angelina Jolie, when she's in these butt-kicking roles and she's so skinny, I can't stand that. It's like, put a little bit of meat on your bones, you know?
Well, it's funny, you mentioned Jackie Chan, and because of him, that was my introduction to Michelle Yeoh, who
I love her.
Yes, and, you know, the woman put a motorcycle onto a moving train.
Yeah,
so,
that is badass.
Yeah, exactly. And as a kid, I grew up loving the films of Pam Grier, and these were ladies that weren't waiting to be rescued. They weren't the wife. They were taking charge in their own way as well.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
So
I really admire that. I just admire strong women in general. Like recently, I've just had a strong liking towards Jane Fonda because I just love her acting. I love that she's succeeded in every part of her life, and I just love that strong woman.
Yep. And she was like the girl. She had the ingenue roles in the 60s, and, you know, even especially when your husband is a director, and then to be able to break from that and you know, on and off screen, that, you know, it took some guts. It took some serious so. Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you remember the first movie you and Robert watched together?
Oh, man.
It's like the newlywed game.
I know. Wow, I have a horrible memory. Movie? I do not remember a movie.
Okay.
I remember the first play we watched together.
What was it?
We watched Wicked together for the first time.
Oh, good choice.
Yeah, it was really good. I'm Broadway, so it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
So you didn't have
to... I'd have to ask him that question. I don't think he'll even remember that.
Well, that's okay. Just it was worth a shot. So
yeah.
Now, when there's a film like The Wrestler or some of the other ones, do you watch wrestling in cinema?
We did watch The Wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was pretty accurate, but to me it was a little depressing.
Well, yeah, and it is.
Yeah, it's very depressing, and it kind of touches a soft spot because you know that there's other wrestlers, you know, personally,
right,
that are in that position. And it really did touch me. You can definitely relate. normal. Did I watch Ready to Rumble? I mean, that was more of a comedy, and I don't think I watched part of that movie. I'll try to. I haven't watched every Rock film, you know, and
right.
I worked with him. I've watched only probably maybe 30% of his films. So, no, not all the time. The film itself has to interest me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily just go out and watch it just because I worked with someone. I haven't watched any of the John Cena movies.
Okay.
Because I haven't really heard great things. So, yeah, and that's about it. But Dwayne, I think some of his movies have been outstanding.
Well, he's been able to take his persona and switch. I mean, there's gotten to a point, and the film critics and I have talked about this, that we don't need to call him The Rock anymore movie wise. He's Dwayne Johnson.
yeah, absolutely. He's so gifted, and he's played different roles, you know, and he's gone outside the box. So I think he's pretty much proven himself.
Yeah. So yeah. I say, what new movies have you watched recently?
We just watched yesterday, 12 Years a Slave.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was a little depressing, too.
but needed. So, I think needed that.
But it was great. It was great. I mean, I thought Michael Fassbender was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the woman's role who played opposite of him. Did you watch the movie?
Yeah, I have. Trust me, we're trying to learn to say her name as well. It took us years to say Chiwetel Ejiofor correctly, so we'll get there.
The one that played the slave.
Yeah, a lot of people are already talking about her maybe getting a Best Supporting Actress nomination. So.
Oh, she was outstanding.
And
outstanding.
One of the benefits of getting the award is we get to pronounce your name correctly, so that's what we're shooting for.
I won't even try. And then we watched Hunger Games. In the past week. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed some of the blockbuster movies because I never read the books. So I watched the first one, and then this was obviously the continuation. So it did intrigue me enough to watch I want to watch Mockingjay, the next one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of what else we've watched. Well, we watch a lot of movies on our days off.
Of course, of course.
Yeah. We'll watch two in one day if we can. So.
Yep. Now, do you give Jennifer Lawrence ass-kicking points?
Yes, I do like her, actually. There's something likable about her because she seems almost kind of humble in her roles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think of what – I never saw Silver Linings Playbook. I do want to see that still.
That's really good, as well as Winter's Bone is one. It was her first nomination.
That's the movie that she first – that I remember seeing her at the Oscars, and people were talking about her, and I had never heard of her before, and they were talking about how she's the up-and-coming actress, and I'd love to see it.
Well, we can add that to your list.
Yes, definitely.
There you go, Joe. No, I did it for the audience. That's Gail Kim, and she's been on the show, and she gave me this.
Hey, this is TNA Knockout Gail Kim, and you're listening to Film Sociology.
And, of course, that eventually led to this. Well, this was a while back.
This is TNA Knockout Gail Kim, and you're listening to Film Sociology.
Just, yes. Fun radio fun with the Irvines, so. Yeah. Okay, so we had that. Because Joe is here, and we were going to talk about pro wrestling in cinema,
mm-hmm.
and Rich is going to he will provide the hater aid, I believe.
Richard's going to nap and make fun of Joe.
Hey, yep. You know, as the guy in YouTube said while he was crying, to him it's real.
Yes. Yeah, exactly right.
So wow. We talked a little bit about obviously Gail Kim with Ninja's Creed and now it was great because Joe had notes and he left them in the car.
Yeah.
So, but that's okay because we, you know, there's no test here at Film Sociology.
We'll have to wing it.
Yeah, we'll have to wing it.
But, I'll wrestle you for him.
Yeah, we're surprised you're not a wrestler. Joe, you could really, you know, be off-putting and challenging and.
There was for a while, Richard, a wrestler who only had one leg,
yeah.
And he was he's very, very small guy, but he got a little cup of coffee with the WWE, and they did a nice little thing with him. He's very talented guy. He has some personal problems, too, though, so, you know.
Wrestler with personal problems?
Yeah, you know.
Gail's fine.
Yeah, Gail seems to be okay.
Yeah, she's more than okay. So I guess I started out with, strangely enough, I found not one, but two documentaries, one that's sanctioned by the WWE and another one that was kind of an independent documentary about the Von Erich family,
mm-hmm.
which if you don't know, one of the big families of wrestling in Texas back, and it was their father Fritz, and there was five boys.
Yeah.
And all one way or another got in the business or tried to get in the business, and there's one son living.
Yeah.
A lot of heartache and
so they're bad wrestlers.
No, they were great wrestlers. they just made bad life choices.
Oh, yes. Okay. Lots and lots of them.
Okay.
Nice. And this was back in the regions before Vince gobbled everything up, mm-hmm. and there was, you know, cuz you had the WWF, the NWA, the AWA, mm-hmm. World Class Championship Wrestling, and then all these different regions like the Northwest and Memphis, yeah. and so on. So anyway, this was Texas, mm-hmm. and I don't believe in the term curse, and this is brought up. That's not really a curse. It's just a really bad string of luck, mm-hmm. that happens to happen that so happened with one single family, and that's these
yeah.
guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were talking off air about the WWE documentaries, because mm-hmm. this is one I've seen, as well as the rise and fall of ECW, and I've been impressed with how much I'm sure they left out a lot, mm-hmm. but how much they did peek behind the curtain. And it's not quite a shoot interview, but just enough background stuff,
yeah.
that if you're of an age and you're mature, I mean, it's a really fascinating watch.
Yeah, yeah, and the WWE puts out a ton of these.
Because they own all the archival footage.
Yeah, they have, as Matt alluded, they, over the course of the past 25, 30 years, have slowly but surely bought up almost every piece of wrestling footage that there is, with the exception of some. There may be some, like, Mid-South or some obscure place, maybe one or two kind of semi-major territories. But other than that, they've gobbled up everything, and they buy it at a hearty discount and then put out a DVD and make, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not a million or two, off of that footage.
Exactly.
Yeah. And a lot of times they're really fascinating. Sometimes you get with the WWE, you get a lot of revisionist history to make things kind of skew in their favor a little more.
And that was, I think that was a concern with buying these. So, but something with the Von Erichs,
yeah.
no, that's, you don't need to angle that. That just happened in and of itself.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
With the death of Chris and the death of Kerry,
yeah.
Mike, David, mm-hmm. Kevin's left, his dad, you know, Fritz, who was the dad, and Kevin says in one of the documentaries that according to him, and it's fascinating because Kevin defends his dad, and Kevin, on more than one occasion, he says, no, dad didn't force. Fritz kind of has a Joe Jackson feel to him, as
yeah.
far as, yeah, the wrestling equivalent of the Jackson 5, and Kevin always is reassuring that we didn't get talked into wrestling. But near the end of the non-WWE documentary, he claims that Fritz pulled a gun on him and said, you'd kill yourself if you had the guts, but you won't.
Oh.
And
yeah.
this was, and of course, Fritz had cancer, and this was near the end of his life. So
yeah.
I'm sure other things were speaking for him as well. But yeah. that's the kind of thing. So, and also the death of Gino Hernandez,
mm-hmm.
and Chris Adams, and then the Bruiser Brody, who was murdered, and
yeah.
nobody was ever really convicted or tried or accused.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a heartbreaking story. Even if you're not a wrestling fan. And if you're
looking at me when you say that.
If you're not a wrestling fan, and if you're into tragic things, Richard,
I love tragedy.
You might want to check this out.
Yeah, it's really fast. And the Bruiser Brody thing, everyone knows who killed him. I think the guy who killed him has admitted to killing him, but because of he was killed in Puerto Rico, he was murdered in the locker room, stabbed,
right.
and the guy who did it was angry about payoffs or something.
Right.
And yeah, it's very, everyone knows who did it. That guy is still in the wrestling business down there. And
a lot of guys aren't going down there because
yeah,
of that.
But a lot of major stars still do go down there though. And it's really just very shady and scary. It's really fascinating stuff.
Because we're sitting here and we're not in Puerto Rico.
We're not in the locker room with that guy.
But. Exactly. So, yeah. So Joe, I know you were going through some of the wrestlers that have done movies. Mm-hmm. I know Gail talked about John Cena. We mm-hmm. talked about Dwayne Johnson. By the way, we don't call him The Rock here. He's earned his dues. If Vince waves a big check at him, then you can call him The Rock that night.
Yeah.
But I think he's done enough movie work and enough actually good movie work that he is earned getting rid of the nickname in his thing. So.
And it sounds like it's even getting better with the stuff coming up. He's doing some more action stuff, and I think there's more of a showy action or acting piece that he I think
really?
He's got coming up in the next year or two.
Snitch was pretty decent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know Fast Furious 6 is coming out in a couple of weeks on DVD and Blu-ray. So mm-hmm. so I know you've gone through some of the WWE films. What mm-hmm. is noteworthy for you?
Well, of course, WWE Studios has emerged over the past several years.
Which is a terrifying concept.
Yeah, and they make a lot of movies starring their, as they call them, superstars. They, to the chagrin of many wrestling fans, have shied away from using the term wrestling or wrestler. They don't call themselves wrestlers, with the exception of one guy currently in WWE. But they make these movies with them, kind of as starring vehicles, John Cena, as you said. I actually interviewed The Miz, Mike Mizanin from MTV's Real World, who is now a WWE superstar. He made the third installment of The Marine. It didn't get any better, I'll tell you that. But, you know, he's in a movie on ABC Family that's out right now called The Christmas Bounty or something. I think it just aired.
Okay.
And he starred in that with a young lady from The Secret Life of the American Teenager, which my wife loves, by the way.
But she's not here, so
she's
can
not
really
here.
Help
she,
us.
She may not. She may still be listening. But,
okay.
But you know, they do this, and they branched out with The Call with Halle Berry. They still included one of their guys. David Otunga is the guy who played a cop in that movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's a smaller role. For the most part, these movies are not good. They're you know, The Call had a theatrical run, but a lot of them go straight to video. Typically, they're not good.
And I think we're going. I was trying to think of who, since Dwayne Johnson, prior to Dwayne Johnson, who had the best movie career. I think Roddy Piper, maybe. Because of They Live.
Yeah, I would say Roddy Piper just because of They Live. Hulk Hogan made several movies.
He made several bad movies.
Yeah,
there's not a Suburban Commando. And,
yeah, Mr. Nanny.
Yeah,
Santa with Muscles.
Those are what we call a rough watch.
Yeah, he even got a series in the 90s. Thunder in Paradise
with Chris Lemon.
Yeah, it was essentially Knight Rider in the water on a boat. It was
that's great.
That's
very. It lasted more than one season. I think I watched a little. Oh, wow. It was tough. It's tough to watch. I think there was a relatively famous supermodel on that show too. I can't remember.
We'll have to check.
Yeah,
Kobe was here. He'd check.
He'd check.
But I also think of the, because I remember in the 80s, it was funny because Hal Needham just passed away, the mm-hmm. great director with great. He did the best and the worst Burt Reynolds movies. But in 1986, he did a film called Body Slam, which I vaguely remember with Dirk Benedict,
uh-huh.
Tanya Roberts, and Roddy Piper, Lou Albano.
Mm-hmm. Tonga Kid.
Yeah, they were all in that. But there was also, I remember, I Like to Hurt People, which was, I believe that was a, was it not Canon? Oh, the other studio that was not Canon, was it Filmways, I believe? But that was another one. Hold on, I'm going to look that up.
Okay,
later.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of those. There was Vern Gagne, you mentioned the AWA. He was the AWA owner and star for years. He made a movie called The Wrestler years before Mickey Rourke did, of course.
Yes.
Which The Wrestler, by the way, is pretty unequivocally the greatest pro wrestling movie ever made.
Yes. Great performance by Mickey Rourke. Powerful, directed by mm-hmm. Darren Aronofsky. Yes, it depressed Gale, but it's also a very realistic look on guys who are for a lot of wrestlers who are still doing it and they're close to 60.
Yeah, yeah, and it's kind of the seedy underbelly, the of course the bad stuff that kind of goes on later on when they're out of their prime but they can't stop.
And that's the only thing they have going for them.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah.
And that's also a film I remember when we saw this. Little insider. As critics, we don't always sit together, but we're in the same vicinity. And there will be a film. There are a number of films as we're watching it. If we could communicate telepathically or like in The Shining, mm-hmm. You could hear all of us go, end the movie now, end the movie now, end the movie now. 9 times out of 10, they don't end the movie right.
Mm-hmm.
They did with the rest.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. There's enough to speak about. I would say I'm going to go and say the second best.
Yeah.
And this is not. I don't mean this as a compliment necessarily, is No Holds Barred, again, Hulk Hogan.
With Tiny Lister.
Yeah, yeah, and it set off at the time the WWF used that as a springboard to bring Tiny Lister in as a wrestler. He wrestled Hulk Hogan with the kind of the premise of it being that he was angry that he lost in the movie. So, and because in real life,
art would, imitates life, or vice versa. Yeah.
And he had exactly one wrestling move he could do, which consisted of kind of a club, sort of club to the back with a forearm.
So he was slightly below the leg drop.
Yeah, lots of tag team matches involving the Macho Man Randy Savage. Yeah, but that was a pretty big angle, and it's a terrible movie, but it's watchable.
You should probably have a few drinks in you before watching.
Yeah,
Anna has Joan Severance.
I was going to say, it introduced me to Joan Severance. And, wow.
That and See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
Yes, that too.
Yes.
Now, I will say one of my favorite bad Christmas movies, I think, starred a wrestler.
Uh-huh.
Santa Slay.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that Goldberg?
Yeah. Yeah, Bill okay. Goldberg.
Jeez, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, ooh. And there seems to be a lot of that.
What, bad wrestling movies?
Yeah, wrestlers, I think since Hogan and Dwayne Johnson and those guys kind of found some success, there's a lot of piggybacking, like you said, Cena. Steve Austin has made a lot of straight to video stuff.
Yeah, The Condemned, I remember, was him and Vinnie Jones, which had really bad timing to come out because a certain wrestler had killed his family and then himself.
Yes, yes.
And the WWE was making a movie that was supposed to make a statement about violence and voyeurism. Bad time.
That's also Vince McMahon at his lowest. If you look at
that dude's got a lot of low points.
Yeah. If you look at that movie through the eyes of Vince McMahon as an executive producer, the financier of that movie, it's really really bad. It's a really a bad statement. It's essentially him trying to justify what he does. If you go back to kind of the 90s, the Attitude Era, when they were really sensationalized and really graphic and pushed the envelope as far as the objectification of women, violence against women, violence against each other.
Right.
It was really rough at that time. And if you look at it in that way, it's kind of depressing and disheartening.
Yes,
beyond being a really bad, mindless action movie.
All right, we got a couple of minutes, so we have a quick edition of this.
Doing our the annual show of dead people we like.
there's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like. Just a couple of notes. One was writer Sid Field, who wrote several books on the art of screenplay writing, of screenwriting. Mm-hmm. So The Gospel According to Sid Field.
Obviously no one in Hollywood has read.
See what he did there?
It's dumb.
Yeah. But anyway, I took a screenwriting course when I was in my 20s, and Sid was a huge influence. So we say thank you to that. And then jazz drummer Chico Hamilton died at the age of 92. Why am I bringing up Chico Hamilton? Because his band, which, by the way, I wish Kobe was here, that he would appreciate this. His band featured Yaz Flute, for you fans of Anchorman.
Uh-huh.
But the Chico Hamilton Quintet also appears in the 1957, I should know the year because it's a masterpiece, Sweet Smell of Success with Tony Curtis and Burt Lancaster. So check that out. Excellent film, great music. And we didn't have time to go what's new and old on DVD and Blu-ray. We're just going to tell you Red 2, Jobs, which might be Ashton Kutcher's best performance because he's playing a raging D-bag. Getaway, which I remember Chris Lloyd and I both liked because it was the less you think about Selena Gomez and Ethan Hawke in a car going really fast, the more fun it'll be. And then The Canyons, which you said, Joe Scheer, was at the same level as The Room.
Yes.
Really?
Not
in a good way. So, hideous. I mean, I really felt bad for Paul. I'm a big fan of Paul Schrader, and I didn't care for this film at all, and she was a train wreck. And yes, James Dean got to do a non-porn. I still love the opening shot of all these empty, dilapidated multiplexes.
Yeah.
Not single theaters, not like the beautiful ones like the Irving and places like that. Yeah. Multiplexes. That was the best thing about it. I think that alone will keep this from me picking it as the worst film of the year. But I think if you're comparing it to The Room, we need to get a keg of beer and all the IFJA guys and watch this.
I would watch The Room 5 times before I'd watch The Canyons again.
And yet you call me a sadist.
Well, as soon as we're done, you're going to jump right back in. What are you up to, like 982 consecutive viewings?
No, I have this.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
go check out Richard at the Independent Critic. Go read Joe and Chris at the Film Yep. They got a little of this, a little of that. Thank you guys for hanging out. I really appreciate it. Have a great rest of the Thanksgiving holiday. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point. Good night, everybody.